in light of the words of Jesus, how are we to see this concept of divorce? And not only divorce, but also marriage, remarriage, and the question of annulments. Throughout my ministry as a priest, this seems to come up every so often, every year, whenever I encounter couples, either preparing for the sacrament of marriage, or just those who might have heard something about the church teaching that they were not familiar with. So I thought I'd come and shed some light on all of this so that we can be quite clear where the church stands. The gospel today, Jesus quoted from the book of Genesis. Spoke about how God had made them male and female, and that this union of the man and the woman were no longer two, but one flesh, meaning they cannot be separated. We hear, of course, the Pharisees, who just love to try to get Jesus into trouble, asking, well, what about Moses? Moses said that we could have a bill of divorce. Kind of saying, like, are you greater than Moses? We know all the while, as the people of Israel were becoming accustomed to God's laws, his precepts, what he's asking of his people to live in righteousness and holiness, oftentimes what he would do is that he would take a step down from where they were and would eventually lead them to the perfect following of the law. So it didn't come rather immediate as soon as they came and encountered God. God led them slowly as a child, how they would learn, led them slowly so that they may come to a greater depth of understanding, appreciation, and willingness to that which was required of them. So for example, you and I would be very familiar with the saying, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. And actually that was more in response towards what was taking place at the time, which was when someone would steal a sheep. In retaliation, the one would want to steal like three sheep. You know, they just wouldn't want to take just the equivalent of that. They want to take more. Or if their family was harmed in some way, well, let's burn their house down. Really crazy. But we can kind of think of scenarios even to this day that people do as well. And so when it was conveyed to them, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, it was to let them know, hey, you know, you're going way overboard. You know, this is where it ought to be. And then we hear Jesus bring it down even closer to the law of the Lord and say, whoever presses you into service for 1 mile, go two. Anyone who asks for your cloak, give him your tunic as well. Increasing the law of charity in the heart. So in this way, when Jesus said that Moses allowed this because of your hardened hearts, again, the Lord was trying to meet them where they are, but then eventually through the passage of time, lead them to a greater perfection of what that love means. Jesus makes this very clear at the end of today's gospel. Whoever divorces his wife and marries another commits adultery against her, and if she divorces her husband and marries another, she commits adultery. Pope Pius XI's encyclical, Casti Canubi, talks a lot about Christian marriage. There's a great deal of depth into what that looks like and what that is. And one of the things in which he says at the very beginning is that to clarify the church's position with marriage as an immutable and inviolable fundamental doctrine, that matrimony was not instituted or restored by man, but by God. This is something in which he has given to us. We're all aware of the existence of no-fault divorce, where any of the members of the party can, for whatever reason, make this attempt to sever this covenant of marriage. And I think it makes it seem as if the marriage vows have no meaning, that they are simply empty promises. And while certainly one can argue that there are instances where separation needs to occur, needs to happen, such may be the case of there being abuse or there be a threat to one's life or to the life of one's children. We know that the marriage vows express this idea of permanence. I'm not leaving, ever. So we better make this work. And work is exactly what it entails. An investment of time, the investment of energy, your attentiveness, and oh yeah, that part of the Christian life that says we have to die to ourselves. Of course, this deals with parties and individuals that are reasonable, that are willing to make this work, that are both invested in it. We know of certainly some circumstances where that is not the case, but we leave all that to the judgment of the tribunal. So, in hearing the message of Jesus, but also recognizing fallen humanity and its weakness, how do we reconcile this idea of divorce? Well, that's where the church, not only in her wisdom, but with the authority that has been entrusted to her by Christ Jesus, has come up with annulments. Now, these are church annulments. These are not civil annulments. Do not ask me about civil annulments. I have no idea what they are. But church annulments, I know, are those things by which a Catholic needs in order to realize that the marriage, perhaps, that was attempted was not an actual marriage. I'll get into that further as I go along. But the church annulments that are given, you know, are not the equivalent of a Catholic divorce. You know, sometimes people just simply see it in that way. See, the process of applying for a church annulment is to prove whether or not all the necessary elements to live out marriage were present in both parties. That is, if they had the understanding of what marriage, the covenantal marriage bond, consists of, and are also within their capacity to live that out. So there are some things that are red flags when we see that present. You know, if you know you are marrying someone and they appear to be a certain way, and then after you marry them, you know, they're like totally different. Like, who did I marry? You know, and like it's just total 180, totally confused, and like, okay, this is weird. You're in it for the money or whatever, right? Or stability. You know, so that would constitute, right? That would say, okay, that was in it for the wrong reason. Didn't understand the concept of marriage. There was also, I remember, I don't think they were actually married in the church, but they were just calling churches, I assume, to seek help. Long story short, this individual was saying that she was having a problem with her husband because, well, they had found out the case of infidelity, so, you know, she was kind of seeking my advice and help, and I was listening to her and trying to talk with her about a few things and different scenarios, and then she said something rather peculiar. She said, well, you know, when we started married life, you know, we'd agreed that we'd have open relationships, and, you know, just this past year, we decided not to have that anymore. And I played the idiot, you know, I said, I'm sorry, you said open relationships. What does that mean? You know, it means exactly what it means. And I was like, okay, yeah, you know what? Your relationship, right, was already in shambles before it began, right? It was on a shaky foundation. You know, you can't come crying, oh my gosh, I can't believe this is happening, when you already have established your relationship to be like that, right? It just doesn't follow, right? Doesn't make any sense. So it's no surprise, right? Sorry, right? So in that instance, yeah, you know, you could apply for a church annulment, right? Because again, the understanding of the permanency of marriage was not present. So this deficiency, you know, this is something that is figured out by the diocesan tribunal, right? Not only has it been defined in canon law, which all Catholics are bound to, but it also makes sense on a logical level. Obviously, there has to be some level of objective measure by which to say, okay, yeah, you know, things are not right here, and this is how we can prove it, so that we know that, you know, it's not just with us. Because sometimes, you know, if we have been in the process of an annulment, you know, we might think, well, you know, is it, you know, based on a whim? You know, am I just based on a feeling that I'm pursuing this? And it's good to have the backing of the tribunal as well as the authority of the church to let us know that, no, you know, what we had thought of was certainly right. One concern that often is brought to my attention when people are applying for church annulments is that they wonder if it affects at all the legitimacy of children. And it does not. It does not affect the legitimacy of children whatsoever. That is unaffected. When it comes to marriage, canon law binds Catholics to marry in the church that is witnessed either by a priest or a deacon. This is done through the celebration of the sacrament of marriage. For those who are civilly married, this is done through a convalidation in the church. And going through a convalidation is pretty simple. You know, I've had a couple of those where, you know, for the most part, it's the couple, and then you have two witnesses, not necessarily the original best man, maid of honor, matron of honor, just two people to witness the marriage, and that's it. You know, it doesn't require much fanfare, it doesn't cost anything, you know, it's something that's rather simple, you know. So I remember when I was working at my home parish as the evening receptionist, I remember the pastor came in and said, you know, I need you for a few minutes. I said, okay, you know, so I put a sign up there, be back in a couple minutes, and I followed him into the rectory, and, you know, it's attached to the church. Well, anyways, you know, I got there, and there was this couple that was there, and it was the couple, myself, the housekeeper, and the pastor. And then, like, all of a sudden, they were saying vows, and I'm like, ooh, like, what? What's going on? And then, like, and then they're like, congratulations, you're married. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I was the best man at a wedding, and I had no idea. You know, like, congratulations, your name again. You know, it's just... So, I mean, again, like, it's... So some people think, like, oh, you know, I have to get it convalidated. You know, I'm civilly married. You know, what's the process of that? It's rather really simple, you know. So I just wanted to throw that out there if that happens to be the case with you. So, you know, the reason why, right, it's important to get the marriage convalidated, the civil marriage convalidated, you know, it's not just simply the blessing of the church, you know, it's having, you know, God recognizing this sacred covenant between the two of the individuals. But it's so serious that those who only have contracted a civil marriage but not have their marriage convalidated cannot present themselves to receive our Lord Jesus in the Holy Eucharist, since they would not be recognized as to be married. Those who are divorced but seek to date and to remarry, right, need to go through an annulment, or else they would not be free to pursue another relationship. This is because, again, the church does not recognize the civil divorce as a way to sever the marriage bond. Those, however, who were divorced but have no desire to date or to remarry, do not have to apply for an annulment before receiving the Holy Eucharist, provided one, as with all of us, is in a state of grace. So the notion that because they, you know, one is divorced says de facto that they are severed from the life of the church is wrong. You know, such is the case, for example, if, you know, you have been desirous in trying to make the marriage work and the other individual just doesn't want to have it. And so then you find yourself divorced, you know, and you didn't want that. And then you think, well, you know, is my life with the church gone? And that's not the case. The case is that, you know, again, just as long as we approach the Lord in a state of grace, you know, we can still continually receive the Holy Eucharist. However, if the individual does plan on dating and plan on remarrying, then yes, absolutely, the annulment should be pursued first. Those who have remarried outside of the church would need an annulment and a convalidation. And the good news is that within the archdiocese, this is not the case in other dioceses. It might be in some, but at least for ours, there is no cost to applying for an annulment. You know, there's a cost because there are actually priests that are involved in it, that are acting as judges. They're part of the tribunal. Actually, Father Sal Palazzolo works at the tribunal. You see him, he sometimes helps us for Holy Mass on Sunday. So, you know, if you have any questions about that, you know, you can talk to him because he works there Monday to Friday. But he is one that sees that more often than I do. But, you know, all of that is funded through the CSA. So that's why there's no cost expressed. So the marriage vows expressed, if one is certainly doing so with all seriousness, commitment, and with both parties, is an extremely good thing, right? This idea of permanence is supposed to give us that assurance that, okay, this relationship doesn't just all of a sudden break apart at the other's whim, right? You know, it's basically saying, look, I know your trouble, so am I. Since we're stuck together, how do we fix this? And a lot of it requires humility, right? We recognize, right, your spouse is not perfect, but neither are you, right? You know, so you look for help, right? You might get counseling, you might develop communication skills. You know, there's a couple books that I recommend. You know, there's one that's called The Temperament God Gave You, The Temperament God Gave Your Spouse. These are just ways that recognize that, well, not all of us share the same personality. We respond to things differently, and it's good to kind of communicate to one another in that way. There's also another one that I recommend. If you go to the website, I think it's just 16 personalities, something like that, or 16 personalities test, and you can find your own personality, you can find your spouse's personality, and learn from the reports about how to interact with each other more effectively, right? You know, sometimes we're just beating our head against the brick wall and trying the same thing that we know we will respond to, but because we're not taking into account the other's personality, how they receive information, how they perceive the world, it's not gonna work. You know, you can't just keep saying, well, I keep trying and trying and trying. Well, you keep trying the same things. You know what that is, right? You keep trying the same things over and over again, and you try to expect different results. What's that? Insanity, right? You know, let's get you a straight jacket, right? You know, so it's not a good thing, right? So we got to try a different approach. And with that, too, there's a book, and they even made one for guys now. You know, that was a recent development within the past couple of years, called The Five Love Languages. So if you've never heard of that before, I encourage you to take a look at that, The Five Love Languages. They're basically ways in which you can recognize how you thrive, that you see love, and there are other ways by which, you know, the other sees love as well. So for example, if, you know, the guy is more of an acts of service kind of deal. So they're more inclined, you know, they're feeling like they're going to show love, they're going to do so by acts of service. They're going to do things around the house, they're going to do favors, they're going to do things without being asked, you know, and they do so because they think this is what's going to make her happy. But if she is more of a words of affirmation person, that's her love language, then all those things, it's nice, but it's not the same as offering words of affirmation at all. You know, so if the guy is saying, I don't know what else I can do, you know, I've mowed the lawn, I planted your favorite flowers that I know they're your favorite, you know, I made sure I cooked you dinner, you know, even your favorite meal, and you still have this grumpy look on your face, you know, I just, what can I do for you? And she's not looking for you to do anything. She's looking for you to say words of affirmation. To say, you know, how beautiful she is. You know, how just the things in which that will reach her heart, that will speak exactly to where she needs to be heard. And so if we don't have that understanding of the love language, then it's like, right, two ships in the night, right? We're saying, I'm giving, and it's like, well, you're giving in the wrong way, you know. It's not working. It's not working. You know, the five love languages, let's see if I can remember them. So you have works of service, you have words of affirmation, you have quality time, you have touch, and then you have, just keep that as a teaser, you have to get the book. It's not because I forget, actually it is, but But there's five, right? There are five of them, and it's great. It's wonderful, and it's true. It's legit stuff, you know. It's stuff that, you know, as you look at that, you know, will really be a way in which you can connect with the other. You know, there was a guy that I was listening to. He was on a talk show, and they had this couple that on the brink of divorce. And, you know, the talk show host said, "Okay, we know that you're great with couples who are thinking about divorce, and so we have a couple right here, so why don't you go and talk them out of divorce? Go!" You know? And he says, "Okay, well, you know, I can see that, you know, both of you look as if you're wanting to make this work." And they nodded their heads, you know, because he knew that they had the divorce papers, but they weren't signed yet. So he saw a glimmer of hope. I remember another thing too that he said, this clinical psychologist. He said, you know, normally it's a really bad thing if the individuals in the marriage have disgust for one another. You know, if they look at each other, ugh, you know, they want anything to do with the other. That's a very bad sign. But he says, if that's not present, then there's a great deal of hope. And so he recommended a few things, you know, which sounds like to us very simple, you know, very common, I should say, very common. But, you know, even though it's very common, it's something that's very powerful if we do employ that. So the first thing he told this couple is to talk. So you got to speak to one another at least 90 minutes a week. 90 minutes. Speak to each other. Speak to each other about not only about your problems, but about your hopes, about your dreams. You know, things that are going on in your life, about the things that you hold important. You know, and I think the way in which he's expressing things really relates to how you got to know each other. You know, before marriage, you know, you spent that time with one another. And so on that same vein, he's like, go on a date night. You know, he said, go once or twice a week. And I'm like, twice a week? You know, it's already hard probably just to organize something once a month, you know. But, you know, so he says, right, his professional opinion is to try to do that once a week. And, you know, just again, just do something fun, you know, and do something where you have that time with each other and you just focus that time, you know, you invest that time. He says, part of the sticking point, you know, when doing such a thing, you know, as a date night, you know, you might feel like, you know, well, is it something I want to do? And he says, I don't care. You know, it's something you have to do, right? It's something that's necessary. And it's amazing, you know, even though it might be something that you're not feeling to do, you know, in the midst of actually doing it, you know, there's going to be fruit. There's still going to be fruit. It says building romance is good. You know, it's something that should not be ignored. Speaking of not ignoring things, he also says, don't ignore your duties. Did you vacuum the mess? Did you wash the dishes? Did you clean the yard? Did you take care of that leaky faucet? You know, all these things are just like very common things, right? But and if you did mathematics, you know, if you tabulated the amount of time that it would take out of your day, right, throughout a year, it's rather significant. You know, they all add up. And so if the duties are a constant source of consternation and conflict, that's going to be a problem. So he says, work on the duties. Work on trying to make sure that you're doing what you need to do. And if it's not something that you can do, talk about it. On that same vein, he says, one shouldn't agree to things one doesn't agree to. You know, and that sounds very duh. But I think what he's emphasizing here are those individuals who have a high trait in agreeability. So this is either you or your spouse. If, you know, the tendency is to say yes to about everything, You know, can you do this? Oh, yeah, sure. Can you do this? Oh, uh-huh. Can you do this? Yep, I can do that. Can you do this? Yeah, no problem. Can you do this? Uh-huh, yeah, I love doing it. You know, and then, right, what ends up happening, right, instead of being true and being honest with ourselves about where we are with the work, is that, you know, this resentment can build up, you know, it can build up within us, it can well up within us, until finally we get like Mount Vesuvius and, you know, we explode because we're just keeping it all bottled up and saying, I'm being kind, I'm being nice, I'm doing what I'm supposed to do, right? And you get this nervous tick because you're just so busy on trying to be helpful. And it's not being helpful, right? It's being destructive. You know, it's a time where we, like, if you have that 90 minutes, you know, of time together, then you can say, to fill in the time, you know, I've been doing this and, you know, I love doing it at the beginning. Right now, I hate it. You know, it's taking up too much of my time. I stress about it. I'm filled with anxiety about it. You know, I am so willing to do these other things that I know you're doing, you know, and I'll take those three things. If you take this one thing, that's how much I don't like it, you know, and you'll be surprised how much that helps, you know, in the long run, in your relationship, in your connectivity with each other. And then also that leads to the last thing he mentions, which is don't avoid fights, you know. Some of us with our personalities, especially with those with high agreeability trait, will tend to get away from fights, right? They don't like the tension, they don't like the anxiety that's there, they just don't like it at all. Maybe they value peace above all things, and so any time that conflict comes and rears its ugly head, we turn tail and run away, or we just want to, right, just say yes, because that's the easy thing to say. And, you know, then we avoid the fight. And sometimes the fight is necessary. It doesn't have to be ugly, it doesn't have to be loud, but sometimes it has to happen. And the whole point of having the fight is not so that, you know, the other can yell over each other, but that, you know, there can be the sharing of thoughts, the sharing of ideas, and hopefully leading to peace and resolution, right? A peace that comes from mutual understanding. You know, that's going to be the whole goal of having a fight. So God designed marriage in a beautiful way. You know, we know, it's definitely not without its difficulties, but we don't go it alone. God wants to preserve that love, grow that love. As with anything worth its value, it needs work. But the outcome, if we cooperate with the grace of God and the glory that is found in the sacrament of marriage, that the grace will let us realize that it is all so worth it.